How might dread of artificial intelligence intersect with South Dakota's property tax debate? You're listening to SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies podcast. I'm Lori Walsh. Property tax reform is a top agenda item this legislative session. For today's analysis, Jonathan Ellis and Patrick Lally will talk about dueling property tax proposals in Pierre. But property taxes are about more than formulas and assessments. We'll also look at the nuanced visions of economic growth in the state. Jonathan Ellis is co-founder of the Dakota Scout. Patrick Lally is editor of Sioux Falls Live. Let's start with what they both have their eye on this week in Pierre.
Definitely some of the House education bills that are out. Makes a lot of sense to me. There's a bill that would give athletes physical education credits, for participating in varsity sports. And then there's some art credits available for extracurricular activities. So students would have more of an opportunity to get those graduation requirements. So that's one thing I'm looking at.
All right. Mr. Lally, things that you have your eyes on in Pierre this week.
I'm just thinking about what that would do to gym class if none of the football players had to be in there. You know what I mean? That changes the whole tenor of dodgeball. Anyway, that sounds like a good one. I'm actually pretty deep into finishing up my reporting and writing for a property tax project that I've been working on. I'm deep, deep into that, and I'm trying to sort of put the pedal to the metal here and get that done and hopefully out next week.
How many different property tax proposals are there at count?
Well, going in, there were 19 plus the governor, right, Ellis? So it's a lot. I'm sure there'll be other variations on the themes. I haven't been digging into so much the individual legislation, although I know some of it, as just what the current state of property taxes are in the metro. So essentially the Lincoln and Minnehaha County, right, which was identified last year as kind of ground zero in the property tax conversation, along with the Black Hills. But those are really two different, I think, set of circumstances. In Sioux Falls, it's really people getting shocked a little bit by the increase in valuation, which doesn't necessarily mean property taxes, but everybody did see a bump across the board coming out of COVID. And so what I've been doing is something that I don't think has ever been available before, which is to take apart the data at a parcel level, meaning house by house data for 5 years, and analyzing that. It's been an interesting journey. It doesn't necessarily fit with the story that's been driving the conversation, and that, to me, that's interesting.
What do you mean? So the story that's been driving the conversation is?
That property taxes in Sioux Falls are out of control.
Okay. And the early data, before you finish the work and publish it on Sioux Falls Live, you're seeing, tease it a little bit.
So you see, I can tell you the general trend is that when you pay the taxes, that's the year we'll use here, which would be 21, there's a little bit of a bump. 22, there's a bigger bump. Actually, in Minnehaha County, that's the bigger bump, average of about 12% increase year over year. Then in 23, then Lincoln County gets their big bump, which is actually like 16% overall. And then in Minnehaha County, it's already going down. I will say, I'm going to give away my lead, but that's okay. In Lincoln County, in taxes paid in 25, the year over year went down on average about 1%. So this is an analysis of only owner-occupied homes and only those that were owner-occupied for the full period. Because particularly in you know, the growing parts of Sioux Falls and in Lincoln County, you have a lot of new construction. And so it's not a, if you're going to track a 5-year trend and it's not on, it doesn't exist in year one, you can't really include it for the other years. Mm-hmm. So when houses come on the tax rolls, sometimes they can see some changes, but it's not a good assessment to include those. So it doesn't. So what we did is strip out anything that wasn't on the tax rolls in the 21, mm-hmm. payable in 21. Now it's a considerable number. You start with about 100,000 parcels. You get it down to just owner occupied. It's about 75. Just owner occupied for the 5 years, it's about 66. Hmm. 66,000 parcels, which is a pretty good sample.
So I want to bring Jonathan Ellis into the conversation around property taxes. Ellis, what are some of the things that you think are not only driving the storytelling, but driving the policy debate over what needs to be done?
As Patrick noted in his, and by the way, the backstory on how Patrick got that data is pretty interesting, and he should probably talk about that too. But in the Sioux Falls metro area, and then in certain parts of the Black Hills, you've seen just these big increases, and in, like Patrick says, in valuations, property tax bills have gone up. And while that's isolated to these parts of the state, you have policymakers who have heard from their constituents that something needs to be done. And so now you've had multiple years of studies, dozens of proposals, and you're going to get, a couple dozen more probably. It's an election year, and the two most populated areas of the state are having troubles with property taxes, and that's driving proposals from the governor candidates. It's driving proposals from lawmakers. I think there's a bill up tomorrow that would zero out the levy for the counties. I mean, so there are all these competing proposals, mainly driven by West River and East River legislators.
Backstory, Patrick, how you got the...
When the debate started last year and I was hearing about Sioux Falls and I looked at my own taxes and, they went up there and then they went down. I wanted to find out exactly where we were talking here, because I know and everybody knows that property taxes are used by local governments, county, city, school districts. And around Sioux Falls and Lincoln County, particularly, you've got Harrisburg and Tea, to a lesser extent, Brandon. These are Harrisburg has grown in ways that I don't think people have quite grasped yet and will grow more. Mm-hmm. There are large chunks of developable land that are coming on board in the next couple of years in southeast Sioux Falls that are going to mean anywhere from, 7,000 to 8,000, 9,000 more students in the Harrisburg School District. Mm-hmm. Just an increase in addition to the ones that are already there. Well, throughout this growth, they've had to build all these schools, and that's been a big part of what drives property taxes in that district. All government spending went up. That's undeniable, right?
In Lincoln County?
Well, in the metro. Okay. City of Sioux Falls
metro. Okay.
The county... Mm-hmm. Everybody went up. What local government people will tell you is that's because everything went up, right? This was when we were in a period of inflation. And Sioux Falls people will say to you, the average property taxes in my analysis of owner-occupied over the 5 years was a 24% increase, which is not for nothing, right? That's real money. But at the same time, those governments had to increase their spending because of inflation, people, materials, all that. Now, whether or not you buy that argument, there certainly are people that don't. And in my reporting, I talk to people who say, that's just an excuse for more government spending, that you should cut first and tax second, you know. And that's a legitimate point of view. But that's where... That's one of the factors behind that bump. And it was a bump that was across the country. It wasn't just here.
This is always the balance. How much do I make? How much am I paying for government services? What government services do I have access? You know, what do I think the role of government is? What services do I think government should be providing? And the balance, which makes people call their legislators when they feel like it's out of proportion.
Yeah. And I will say, to go back to the data, so I went looking for the data and it couldn't find it anywhere. So then I started having conversations at the county level and found somebody in county, Minnehaha County, who was able to help figure out what I was asking for and get me that data, which took a little while, took a week or whatever, a few days. Then I went to Lincoln County and it was night and day. It's just a different situation down there in terms of how the information is collected, gathered, and they don't have the staffing and they don't, I don't want to say they don't have the expertise because they have some, but they just don't have the resources that Minnehaha County does to bring all that together. And so it took 3 months of going back and forth, figuring out how to get it parsed out the way we needed to, and some, you know, negotiation over fees, which we were able to get through. But it's just a lot. And it's you know, every county is a little bit different. You've got different assessors, you know, all of that different stuff. But you also have differences in the way property is organized and categorized. They have different categories of property in Lincoln County than they do necessarily in Minnehaha County. Just the way they zone and assess property. Minnehaha County's assessment process is much, much more detailed than anywhere else in the state. It's numbers. There's a population base and a property base that allows you to slice and dice assessments in a way that if you're in a county with 10,000 people, you maybe only had 20 home sales in the last year of 10.
So, Jonathan, two things are happening here at once. One, we see county by county, there's all these differences. So if you are a voter and you're following what's happening in Pierre, you need to be thinking about whether that's good for you in your county. Therefore, you need to understand whether how things work in your county. But then also with all these competing proposals that might come up in committee and then get shot down, what is the comprehensive way to solve this problem? Is that leadership from the governor's office? How do you see it?
Well, I think some of these proposals are fairly comprehensive. You know, if you're in one of the vast majority of counties in the state that really aren't seeing an increase in property taxes to the extent that we are in West River and East River, you might be concerned with, for example, Dusty Johnson's proposal of just letting the sales tax sunset revert back to what its rate was, because that's a tax increase for you. And you maybe would prefer to have that permanent. There are these competing proposals. The Governor Rodin's the optional sales tax at the county for counties. So that could mean more taxes that you'll pay somewhere else in order to get property tax relief in certain parts of the state. So these proposals are going to have an effect more than likely on everybody. Especially if you're talking about, tax increases in other places. So, if you're not in that part of the state where we're seeing a lot of those property tax increases, you're still going to want to pay attention because the solution may come and affect you.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point, Jonathan, which is many of them involve sales taxes. Like that, it's replacement revenue, right? The governor's, option being one of them, where it would just be a one-to-one with the counties that they would use to decrease property taxes, which, you're not going to find a lot of local government people that have a problem with that necessarily, but it does shift the burden. And there are other proposals out there that you know better than I that would do even more sales tax to offset property taxes. That's shifting a tax burden. I don't know how else you can see that to people who are less able to. It shifts it to renters. It shifts it to just average people and away from homeowners.
Governor's arguing it shifts it to visitors.
Yeah. Right.
And therefore that's
maybe
the places where the property taxes are the highest are the places that get the largest number of visitors. And therefore the sales tax will come from them and that will boost. I mean, it comes from us too, but that was the argument that, as I understood it in the State of the State address, was, we're going to leverage these visitors and visitor numbers?
A lot of those visitors come from South Dakota, you know. So if you're from Brookings, right, you're a visitor.
Yeah, but millions come from outside South Dakota.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. I understand. To the Black Hills. I mean, we get a lot of tourism here, obviously, but it's regional tourism. And if you really want to take, I don't understand why they don't just crank up the hotel taxes if that's who you want to hit, because I don't
because
know.
Because nobody wants to raise taxes. Well, Jonathan, whenever what?
Whenever you travel, you pay way more wherever you go than you do if you get a hotel room here. So but that's just.
Jonathan, who has the advantage here? It seems like the governor's proposal would have the advantage. He gets the state of the state where he was able to say, this is what I did last year. He's got Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen going around and talking to everybody and explaining it. His plan is fairly simple. Does he have the advantage of getting his proposal through, or does somebody from the outside have an advantage because they don't have to deal with any, you know, compromises, for lack of a better word?
You know, I would say by virtue of the fact that this is the governor's office and that South Dakota has, compared to other states, a very strong executive branch, I think that when the governor wants something, the governor automatically starts off at an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the appeal to some lawmakers will be, yeah, well, it'll be something that's voted on at the local level. It's, you know, it's a locality issue. So I do see that there'll be some appeal with some lawmakers on that. The sunset of the sales tax, I mean, that's been a topic of debate since the holiday was passed a couple years back.
Yeah.
So there's also a potentially legitimate area there for revenue. But I just, by virtue of it being the governor's proposal, that automatically starts off, with an advantage for sure.
Hey, Jonathan, I have a question for you. And it comes from when you had Odenbach on your podcast. And the thing that struck me about that was he said that he sees property taxes as a moral issue. And there is this trend that, why am I paying government rent for land that I own? And you hear that all over the country. How much of that is at play here in this conversation? That's a major subtext that doesn't get talked about very much.
It's definitely part of, I think, some within some wings of the Republican Party that they see it that way. But I think most lawmakers see, property taxes as sort of a legitimate place and a longstanding place in order to fund some of the essential services we talked about, especially schools. But yeah, that's definitely part of what some lawmakers, do think that is a moral issue. But
I'm not paying property taxes as rent on my house. I'm paying for the government services to live in that neighborhood. The ambulance is going to come if I need it. The fire truck is going to come if I need it. The school district that I can send my child to, or the neighbors send their children to, right?
That's the argument against
that. Yeah. So they're saying okay.
But you can make that same argument about income taxes. Mm-hmm. Like, why do you get to profit off my labor, right? Or why do you have to take so you can make that same argument, I think, about any tax, right? I mean,
Well, we do, and we don't. And we don't have an income tax, and we do argue and make that argument about every single tax. I just remember a conversation with Dennis Dugard when he was governor about all the exemptions.
Mm-hmm.
And, anytime you wanted to take away an exemption, people would say you're raising taxes, and it was a moral catastrophe because you had no right to raise taxes by removing an exemption.
Yep.
For lawnmower sales or for some kind of equipment sale or what have you.
Yeah.
And that was always a difficult political balance beam to walk on in peer.
There's an arm in this conversation, too, that gets to growth, which starts down this whole path of data centers and everything else.
Yeah, let's pivot to that if we could.
Yeah, I think so. And it's this idea, but they're related in some way,
mm-hmm.
in that...
Hyperscale data centers. The big ones.
And there's obviously a groundswell of opposition to that and to the one that's planned here. But it is.
Was the groundswell at the city council meeting, for people who aren't from Sioux Falls, was that groundswell of opposition based on the data center or based on the way city government is run and the feeling that they had that they didn't have a heads up?
No, it was AI.
It was the whole AI argument.
Call it fear of AI.
Fear
right?
of AI.
And
mm-hmm.
the unknown. And I'm not criticizing that. There were some people that said, how
taking a stand against this.
Yeah. This existential threat to humanity, right? I mean, it gets to that conversation sometimes. There are obviously questions about water usage and electricity and pollution and all of that, and those are all legitimate concerns. But when you ball it all up, you just have this, I think, this sense of what are we don't know what we're doing, you know? And it's hard to explain, and people, I think it's going to get on the ballot in Sioux Falls. It'll only be a question about zoning because that was what they voted on, but it'll be a vote on the data centers as a whole. And you know, and when it becomes that, I don't know how that's a losing argument for somebody who's pro data center.
Jonathan Ellis, what are you hearing in the debate over data centers that you think is relevant to pay attention to right now?
Well, definitely, Patrick points out AI is the big one. But, you know, I guess as I pointed out, I mean, there's whether or not Sioux Falls has a data center is going to be irrelevant to how AI proceeds, both here and outside of the United States. But, the water is an issue. The backers of this program or this particular rezoning and the data center here in Sioux Falls would suggest, you know, that the water is not an issue because they only have or permitted by the city for like a domestic or
it's a closed loop system that uses very little water, and that is true, right?
Yeah, that is
okay.
True.
Yeah, that is accurate.
So
keep going.
Know, so
yeah.
Some their argument is like some of these fears are about data, are about the water, about the electricity usage. You know, they're overblown. That it's not a real thing for this particular project.
Mm-hmm.
And their argument also is that, look, I mean, if you don't let us have it rezoned, you know, as light industrial, or, you know, we can't even put like a distribution center there. I mean, they would be very hamstrung on what they could do with that land. But
where are they getting their power from?
Who? Oh, Xcel.
They would, Xcel. And they're actually situated near the Xcel, substation. I mean, it's actually it would be very advantageous for them to be there if that's where they planned on using a data center because they could basically plug in.
Yeah, and Xcel says they can get them the power, but they can only do that once, basically, is what Xcel told me. They can get 500 megawatts, but they can't get another 500 megawatts.
Per 500 megawatts for what duration of time?
Well, that's just the amount that they would need per year.
Okay.
But that's generation, and Xcel doesn't currently have the generation capacity to do it again,
Go ahead, Jonathan. What were you going to add to that?
Well, I was going to say that the need for data centers, okay, if we accept the fact that there's a need for them, for whatever, for cloud computing, for stuff that not even necessarily related to AI, but if the need for those, I think, is maybe a good thing in the sense if you support, as I do, the next generation of nuclear power, which is clean energy, and these small reactors that are coming online, because the need for those will push us into an area where we just have to produce more energy and preferably clean energy, right? So this could be an issue that propels us forward in terms of energy production, and I think that's a good thing.
I agree with that. The small-scale nuclear is definitely the next big wave.
Which a company could bring in on their own. It could be their own small-scale nuclear power source for their own data center, which could be brought in, but in theory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to convince a community that they want nuclear in their neighborhood, and that seems to me even harder than convincing somebody they want AI. That seems it. People are going to hear the word nuclear and they're going to think existential threat.
The funny thing about it is it's across the street basically from the former small-scale nuclear plant that NSP Pathfinder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, finding the power is going to be a big problem. I think, you know, Jonathan touched on it there about it's going to happen anyway, and that's true. Whether or not they'll be in South Dakota, Jonathan can speak to the tax.
But
proposal.
If you're opposed to this, you don't care if it, you can only control what's happening in South Dakota. And if you can keep it out of South Dakota, then you kept it out of South Dakota. You don't care if it went to North Dakota.
They're already
if you're
North
opposed
Dakota,
to it.
Iowa. I mean, right. Yeah, right. And
yeah, North Dakota already has.
Right. But what am I missing? If you are with the contingency of people who don't want this in South Dakota, the fact that it's happening somewhere else is not a deal breaker for you. You're like, great. And we will preserve in South Dakota an opposition to this based on our regulatory framework and the will of the people. That's what you would argue, right? What am I missing, Jonathan?
Well, you can make that. That's a good. There's that argument. What I'd say is AI is going to happen. If you're concerned about AI, well, keeping it out of South Dakota is not going to help you. However, I've talked to some opponents of the one up in I think Dual County, and they're like, we don't want a big old data center out here where people like to go hunting and so. Mm-hmm. So to your point, Lori, that's exactly right. That would be preserving their way of life there. So they don't want to compromise that.
And let's go back to a piece that you wrote in Sioux Falls, Patrick, because it's comparing Minnehaha County leadership and then a city councilman from Lincoln County saying every county gets to decide what kind of lifestyle you're creating. And you've got Mayor Paul Ten Haken saying, we really can't stop this economic growth. People are going to come here. Businesses are going to open. We're going to manage it, talk about it, grow the economy. That's good. But you can't build a wall around a city and say you're not growing anymore. And then you went to Lincoln County and talked to that county commissioner who's like, well, we can put regulations on building permits and we can put regulations on all kinds of things to create the kind of space the people of our county want. And to Jonathan's point about hunting or outdoor recreation, people in different locations in South Dakota can say, this is what we're trying to create as far as the community that people want to live in here.
For sure.
And maybe we have decided it does not include a hyperscale data center. Even though we might like to use AI.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that was Joel Ahrens in Lincoln County, where he is, I think, next week after, proposing a ban on data centers in Lincoln County because there's people, he says, sniffing around down there, too. And that'll probably pass in Lincoln County. Their idea there, or his idea, is that Lincoln County is a place for rural residential living. And they have a lot of it already because they have different zoning in Lincoln than they do in Minnehaha. Mm. You can build a development in Lincoln that you can't build in Minnehaha. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying we're leaning into that because that's a way of life that we like. And that may not, it does, I know in Lincoln County, it doesn't involve solar, wind, a prison, or data centers. Any of those things are way out. And that's, because that's what they want.
And Jonathan, this is the whole concept, which I actually find very interesting to follow, is this whole idea of the nuances of what does economic development mean? And what does it mean to us now? And what does it mean to different groups of Republicans and peer? What does it mean to the Democrats? What does it mean to indigenous people? I find that fascinating as people look at what economic development is. What are you seeing in the debate back and forth between folks that you find really sort of politically intriguing?
Well, it is, as you point out, because it depends on what part of the state you're in, right?
Yeah,
I mean, what does economic growth look like on Pine Ridge, for example, it's going to look a lot different than in Sioux Falls. And but there is, without question, I think the rapid increase following COVID in terms of people moving here has definitely put a lot of economic development projects are being met with a lot of skepticism, let's put it that way. And I think that certainly showed itself in the last primary, where you saw what you could argue were a number of pro-growth Republicans who were defeated in primary elections. And that has triggered, amongst the business community, especially in Sioux Falls, that's been greeted with alarm. And they feel like, the state is now being run by anti-growth Republicans. And so I think that you'll see that'll be an issue in this upcoming primary, so it'll play out politically. But, that's where, for example, you can't get funding for airports, right? from the state because there's a view that it was the anti-growth Republicans who are holding that up. So the rapid growth here in the state has definitely, I think, have stopped, put some people on pause saying, hey, we don't want this. You know, we don't want to see our communities change so quickly.
Mm. All right. What else is on your minds today? That's fascinating stuff. How do you make property taxes interesting? I don't know. I don't have a solution for that yet.
Well, it's not.
I mean, it's important. It's impactful.
I mean, people.
Is it dynamic? Not always.
Yeah. I mean, people, it's something they can identify with if they own property.
And if they don't, then the taxes are going to impact them. Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't buy a house.
Right.
It's interesting. Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot I don't want to go down this path again, but there is a lot that you can do. Targeted things for specific groups of people, and that isn't some sort of sweeping change to the property tax system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. So that'll be interesting.
Incremental versus all at once.
Well, and that's you know, I mean, Dusty Johnson's proposal is for first-time homebuyers, and this is very targeted, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That they don't pay property taxes for 2 years. So there are those ideas out there for sure.
And in a primary. Focused, targeted, and nuanced isn't always going to get the most attention.
No. The biggest
frustration. You're also working, you're trying to figure out good policy in a time when you also have to explain people your property tax when you knock on their door.
And my frustration always is that, for instance, with the data center discussion, when people are saying, you just drop this on us. Well, I wrote about this. Everybody wrote talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the TV stations did. I have no idea. But everybody that I know it did. Jonathan did. I did. Jody Schwann did. It was out there. And so it's very frustrating when I hear stuff like that. It's people just don't. They just don't pay attention. And then.
Well, to be fair, people have a lot to pay attention to.
Right. But if you're going to vote,
they're paying attention to a lot of things.
Yeah. You know, and then it comes to an election and it just becomes not about.
Before you show up at City Hall and say, you didn't tell us, you should go back and check to find out if that's true.
Look in your email.
Yeah. It's okay. Go back and just say, oh, I missed this. And then come and say, hey, we have a problem with this. Slow this down. But don't say, you didn't tell us.
Yeah. And that frustration isn't new at all.
Mm-hmm.
But in a Republican primary, where, it's a very important election for this state. What are they talking about and how are they talking about it is important to me.
Yeah. What I'm hearing a lot of, Jonathan, is in the economic development conversation, a frustration with this concept of the next big thing. What is the next big industry? Who is the next big group of people? Because what I'm hearing from where I'm sitting is a lot of small businesses and people who've been here a long time who say, well, I want my business to be invested in. I don't want CJ Schwann's to gobble up however millions of dollars. I don't want the new big data center or even the new big national defense kind of thing. I want you to invest in the company that I have, I want you to invest in my idea. And they don't feel the state is doing enough to invest in Main Street ideas. Whether that's somebody who wants to open a daycare in a rural community and like, hey, that's a small business and I'm solving a problem for my community, or somebody who wants to build, a dog kennel and ship it overseas.
Dairies. We have a lot of dairies. A lot of money.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. There's fatigue with that, the next big thing. I mean, certain quarters. I mean, some people, like going back to Joel Lorenz in Lincoln County, they just want to preserve what they have, right?
Yeah.
They're not interested in the next big thing.
Yeah.
So no question that fatigue is out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it underpins a lot of the discussion right now. It feels like, I feel it, people just don't want things to change very much.
Well, if your unemployment is low, like ours is, and your community is good, you have an affordability problem if your property taxes are too high or if inflation is high or if you can't afford to buy groceries. That's important to you on the national level and on the local level. But if everything else is going well and your kids are doing great in school.
People care about three things. They care about three things. My kid has a good teacher. Not education is great. My kid's teacher's good. My street is safe. And I have something to do with my family on the weekend.
We'll leave it there. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Jonathan Ellis is co-founder of the Dakota Scout. Patrick Lally is editor of Sioux Falls Live. You can find both of them online. We'll put some links up on our website at sdpb.org as well. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.